welcome to the Happy Ramp podcast. I'm Ted Kluck, joined by Barnabas Piper and Ronnie Martin. And boys, we have a lot to talk about today, including we have one serious topic and two funny ones. So I think what we're going to do is start serious and end funny. But before we do that, Pipe, you've got some business to take care of, man, because it's raining sponsors right now.
It is raining sponsors. We have with us as a sponsor, Nav Press again, as they have been and as they will be for another episode or two. And so they're still pushing and highlighting those Jerry Bridges books, which are The Blessing of Humility and The Pursuit of Holiness. And I think there's something pretty cool about a publishing company spending time and money on an author who's been around for, you know, decades, but they still see this as pertinent and relevant and timeless, and so they're reintroducing Bridges' works to an audience who might have otherwise missed it. So I think listeners should check this out. So again, the
I think that's really cool, man. Everything in publishing is about new.
Yes.
You know, new. But Big R, maybe in 20 years they'll be talking about our books.
You never know. One can only hope if someday we can actually write a classic, you know, worthy of being talked about in 20 years.
Exactly.
So. Well, I think there's something to be said for you get guys like Bridges or J.I. Packer or R.C. Sproul or some of these guys who they have influenced the people who have influenced us. And so it really behooves us as the, you know, if we are leaders in any capacity to go back and tap into those people who influenced our influencers. And so listeners, go check out these two books specifically, The Blessing of Humility and The Pursuit of Holiness, from Nav Press. You can get them at Amazon or Lifeway stores, little company man push there. So go check those out. The other sponsor we have is Moody Publishers. They are back with us. We actually gave them a little bit of a teaser last week, but they're highlighting a book called On Pastoring, A Short Guide to Living, Leading, and Ministering as a Pastor by H.B. Charles. It's a phenomenal book. So if you're in ministry, or really especially if you're looking at going into ministry, I'd say this is a book that you could – this is sort of a foundational manual kind of book. Charles has been pastoring since he was about 18 years old, and he writes about how
he's 22 now.
Yeah, he's been doing it for all, you know, 4 years. He's experienced. No, I mean he's been doing it for over 20 years now, and he writes with humility. He writes, it's a really practical book. So I mean everything from sermon preparation to your caring for your own soul to maintaining humility and perspective. But the thing that stands out to me is that he does not waste time on any of the peripheral aspects of ministry. It's character, it's scripture, it's relationship with God. It's all of the things that a pastor ought to be deeply invested in. It's not about, you know, platforms and techniques and strategies, all of which are good things, but they are the tangential things. So that book is called On Pastoring, A Short Guide to Living, Leading, and Ministering as a Pastor by H.B. Charles. It just came out this past week. And if you want to encourage your pastor, get them this book. If you are a pastor, get this one. Or if you're looking at being a pastor, I would get this book. It's really, really good.
Now, Pipe, do we have a sense for what the HB stands for in the name H.B. Charles?
Yeah, I was curious about that myself. I appreciate you asking that.
No problem, Big R.
I don't know, but I think if we don't know the answer to a question, we should just fill in the blanks.
Make something up if we don't know the answer to something.
The H,
yeah, I think
the H has
that's always
be
a good
Horatio, right?
I mean, Hiram.
Absolutely,
Hiram.
Yeah,
I think the last time I heard H.B. Charles, I was thinking like Hiram Benjamin.
All right, Pipe, what do you got for the B?
I mean, Benjamin's good, but I mean, I'm going to go with Barnabas, so I'm going to go with Horatio Barnabas Charles.
Oh, you know what? I think that's a winner right there.
Ego's really landing heavy and hard today already. All right.
Horatio Barnabas.
Let's roll with that.
I mean, and if your name was Horatio Barnabas, wouldn't you go by HB as well? Because who wants to be called that?
Absolutely.
Big R, would you ever use the initials in a publishing context? I feel like once you reach a certain age, as a thinker, as a theologian, you go with the initials. Is that in your future?
Yeah, I mean, what I felt and what I have regretted many times is that I didn't start with the initials. And so my question is, if we didn't start with initials, are we allowed to add them later, or are we just stuck forever? That's what I need to know.
I think it's a rebrand. You know, it's sort of like yeah, never mind. I'm not going to say that. But
I don't know where you were going with that, but I'm
Madonna's just... various kind of rebrands and changes in approach over the years.
So in other words, like if I want to go with Sasha Fierce here in a couple of years,
when I
finally release that book that actually people are going to buy, maybe that's the time to do that. I got to come up with an alter ego.
Yeah, when you're ready for a change in approach completely, that's when you do it, man. That's what
I'll throw out the initials. I'll have my R.C. Sproul moment at some point.
R.J. Martin. Obviously.
I was going to go with R. Joseph Martin. What do you guys think about that?
I think that's strong because I think R.J. sounds like a little kid.
Yeah, it does.
Yep.
R. Joseph Martin sounds like a guy that sells some books.
R. Joseph Martin sounds like a cult leader.
Dude, you're right. L. Ron Hubbard and R. Joseph Martin on the same panel discussion.
I'm gonna roll with it as a consideration for the future.
I like it, Big R. I like R. Joseph. I think you're onto something there.
What about R. Joseph? Just skip the last name. How about getting like kind of just edgy like that? How about that?
I like it.
All right,
R. Joseph.
Yeah. That's real cool. That's real cool.
I feel like that works better in the music industry than I'm picturing that on the cover of a book. I mean, unless you was a particularly edgy book.
Yeah. Well, we don't write those, so maybe it won't apply.
Exactly.
So
our industry doesn't do those.
Right.
You're kidding. Boys, we do have some things to talk about. One of which is serious, and it's interesting. We talked off the air about this topic, and what we're going to talk about is rape culture and this case that happened at Stanford. All over the news right now, and it's generating a lot of dialogue. And Big R, you said, you know, I think it's good that we're talking about this. And full disclosure, for the life of me, I can't understand why. I don't know what we're going to contribute to it that other than just saying, man, it's sad, it's astonishing, it's heavy, you know.
I know, because what you're saying is what, you know, three middle class, like, white dudes, you know,
right. What are
on
we
a podcast
to this thing, but exactly. At the same time, I do appreciate you bringing it up, and I do think that you know, as parents, you guys have daughters. This is one of those topics about which people say, you know guys will tend to sort of, you know, sigh and say things like, well, I'm glad I don't have daughters, but I have two boys, you know, I have two boys in the house who I'm trying to raise to be, you know, obviously Christian in their worldview, but also just kind and respectful, and
I would venture to say this topic has, I don't know if you can draw a neat dividing line, more to do with parenting boys than it does girls.
I agree.
Because
I couldn't agree more.
Because no woman is ever at fault for a sexual assault done to her. Does not matter what decisions she has made. If a man forcibly or coerces her into any sexual act, that's not her fault. And so that doesn't take the responsibility off me to raise my daughters to be godly and be strong and be confident enough to fend off somebody or to make good decisions. But again, never a woman's fault. Whereas we have failed young men if the phrase rape culture can exist. Like
that's right.
That phrase should not exist. So like how can rape be a culture unless it's Sodom and Gomorrah? Like that's obscene.
Well, and I think you make a great point. And this story brings in to me all kinds of interesting things about socioeconomics and the culture and pornography and just sort of the deadening effect over time of this over-sexualized culture that we live in. So just to very briefly recap the story, and then I'll let you guys riff on this. There was a swimmer, right? He was a swimmer at Stanford. So very high-end school, high-end, you know, socioeconomic status ostensibly. And he raped a girl at a party, and got off with a very light sentence. And now there's a lot of controversy surrounding this. So, you guys, as fathers of daughters, have a unique perspective on this. So, Big R, you brought this topic to our attention. Yeah, what did you want to say about it?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm open. I'm open to any kind of dialogue about it. To be honest, the reason why I had gotten into a conversation with my own daughter, who's 20 years old, and she, she listens to the rant, and she suggested that we do a little riffing on it. And again, there's a lot of justifiable moral outrage in terms of this, youngish privileged white swimmer who got off on a very lenient sentence from the judge.
6 months, because the judge said it would have it would be bad for him to be in prison for longer than that. And my thought was, well, isn't that the point?
That's the point.
It's supposed to be bad for him.
Right. So I think, man, again, the implications for this, right? So we can sort of shoot off into I think there's so many different lanes we could drive down when it comes to this. And I think it's just I think you kind of hit on it a little bit, a Big T, which is just the sadness of a culture that decides it's made its own moral decisions on what is more important and what is less important in regards to issues of to issues of sexuality in general, and then again sexual crimes against women in general, saying, well, we have decided that this is more important, this is less important, and then in the midst of that, we make all kinds of value judgments.
Right, you've got a judge saying, because this guy is a well-to-do swimmer at Stanford, prison would really be bad for him. His life is more sort of worth protecting, in the sense of, we're going to keep him out of the pitfalls of the legal system and just assume that he's going to be okay, because he's got some bank and he's got a dad who wrote a really heartstring pulling letter on his behalf.
Right. So in other words, what got heightened, what's most important, the thing that we're valuing the most, with this decision, is his career trajectory, right? So now that is what is taking precedence. That's what's taking center stage, is career trajectory, and how this guy is going to be able to operate in a world now that is going to afford him less privilege because of what his father said was just a 20-minute mistake. You know what I mean? So what it now does is it discounts the damage being done to the victim. It sort of takes that and it puts that in a category, saying that, well, we can't do anything about that. We now have to deal with this on the basis of how this guy is supposed to now live in society as somebody that is going to be a sex offender, whereas nobody's dealing with how this woman now is supposed to move forward in society as a victim. Right, exactly.
That is astonishing. A 20-minute mistake, like forgetting your keys is a mistake.
His father called it 20 minutes of action.
Yes, I'm sorry. I made a mistake. He didn't even
call it a mistake. Mistake falls about 4 billion miles shy of what it was. Because a mistake is forgetting your keys. A mistake is, I forgot to send that email or whatever.
Yeah. I left my coffee on the top of the car.
When you call it 20 minutes of action, to me, and I'm stereotyping here, but to me, that says that this is a father-son relationship where his dad was the one who – his dad is a total enabler. He is an enabler of all of his sexual exploits. He is an enabler of all of his poor habits and all of his quote-unquote mistakes. That's what I read in that. And it – I cannot imagine – and I don't have boys, but I can't imagine – being a parent of any child, having them commit a crime like that against somebody and defending them for it, period. Mm. I would be worse than the prison system if my son did that.
Yeah. Right.
And what I like about this is that it brings up these matters of just justice. Like, it sort of levels out our thinking on the things that we deem just and unjust. And so, even having a conversation with my daughter about these things, we're able to talk about, there's a general natural sense of outrage that should sort of rise up in us. And should desire to see that kind of thing punished, right? And so I think that I think it brings up some really, really good conversations for us to have about sort of this natural reaction that we have for wanting to see certain things punished. And yet there are other things in our lives that we look at that we're a little softer on that we actually, in a sense, act like this guy's dad about. You know what I mean? That we let slide a little bit. And but when we see something like this, like nobody I'm talking to wants to see this slide. And we want to see this kid receive the full force of the law come down upon him. Like, I don't want this guy to get out of jail. Right? Like, that's what I want. I want to see this guy punished justly for a crime that deserves that level of justice.
Well, and I think even beyond that, you want to see like actual repentance, actual contrition, more than just, oh, my kid's depressed. He's not eating as much because he's, he's worried about his, his future earning potential. That's right. Not contrition. That's not brokenness. That's not repentance. That's like you're bummed that you got caught.
Right.
It's not
remorse. It's regret.
Right. Back to being a parent, Pipe, which you brought up that great point. I mean, back to raising boys or girls. I mean, the point of all discipline is to engender true repentance, God forbid if one of our kids did something like this, as hard as it would be devastating. But what you would want to see, whether the legal system brings it about or whether, something we would say to them would bring it about, you want contrition, you want brokenness. Yeah. You don't just want to see them being, they're stressed, they're bummed out because they got caught. And I think what you said was so apropos about this father. I mean, you've got multi-generations of immaturity going on here, and for a father to use the word action in this context.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just astonishing. It's literally astonishing. And yet, why are we surprised when we see immature older people? You know what I mean? Our culture is so broken, our world's so broken.
Well, that's it right there, T. We're talking about a level of brokenness and depravity of which, like, you can't put a lid on.
It doesn't know any bounds.
Yeah. And so from our perspective, from the perspective of believers, we look at this and we just see, gosh, this is what happens when brokenness goes uncontained.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Big R. So you've got a judge playing God. You've got a parent just trying to
– a judge who, my understanding, is also a former Stanford swimmer, by the way. So just throw a little extra sort of nepotism into the mix.
It's amazing that sports comes anywhere into this conversation. Do you know what I mean? In terms of informing decisions.
Sports are a mark of privilege because you see the same thing. I mean, the Baylor football program, Baylor University football program, is being systematically dismantled because they covered up a series, just sort of a pattern of sexual assaults against women. And the coach and the athletic director knew some aspect of this or willfully chose not to know, which is the same as knowing. Right. And they're now both out of jobs, and a program that was becoming one of the strongest in the country will likely take a deep dive, and who knows what sort of sanctions they'll face. Mm. And sports were the reason for it, because you guys were talking about earning potential and protecting that. Well, they were protecting the privilege of these athletes and the fact that their value was in their ability to tackle or run the ball or block.
And Baylor's got a $150 million stadium to pay off now, right, which is going to be a lot harder to do if they go 2-9 every year.
Yeah, so their earning potential was for the university, not for themselves, right, but that made them an asset to be protected, and it made the woman in each of those instances disposable by that ethic, which is
complete
garbage.
And you know this, Pipe. I mean, if you're any kind of a decent athlete, the first person you meet on campus when you're being recruited – they get a hot girl to show you around.
I was never a good enough athlete to discover that, but I know it to be true for others.
Well, but the implication is, we're going to surround you with this if you come here.
Yeah.
And certain things will be your purview, you know, that aren't there just for your run of the mill math major or whatever. And I think being ensconced in an elite sports culture, it throws off your sense of what's normal and what's not normal, what's right, what's wrong. It retards your development oftentimes, I think, in terms of just thinking through what happens in relationships, because there's so much consumption happening all around you. Mm-hmm. You know, women are dehumanized in that context. And
you get that from, I mean, porn is one of the largest industries in our country, and it's commonplace now. Like, it's not even a thing that is viewed as morally reprehensible by the vast majority of the population anymore.
It's just a thing that people consume.
And right. that is feeding people daily an ethic that sex is about me, my pleasure, no commitment, no vulnerability, no exchange of affection whatsoever, and oftentimes the abuse and manipulation and exploitation of women. And so there is zero emotional damage portrayed and maximum emotional damage, the potential for it. And then that is taken into a college dorm full of, you know, weed and cocaine and alcohol. And what decisions do you think are going to be made when sex is all about me and I am all about me and I'm the most important person on campus? And
that's right.
The only depiction of women I've ever had drilled into my head is that they do not matter and that they are objects for my pleasure. Of course I'm going to make that decision. And that's – and obviously I'm portraying the upside down ethic of things, not the way it ought to be.
Yeah, and I think – I mean, Pipe, that's so well said. And so I think when we think about, you know, having daughters and we think about women, I mean, that is the pool that they are putting themselves in. So I just think, you know, you think about the kind of communication and the kind of, you know, the kind of counsel you can give women, which is just, man, be very careful about where you put yourself, you know? I mean, use wisdom, use discernment about the places that you decide to step into, because it's not safe. We were talking about safety now, and it's not safe, because you're describing a pool of men who have grown up with that type of sexual ethic. They've had nothing in their lives to communicate something that would allow them to value women.
And right. I saw another right as all of this was breaking with Baylor and Stanford and the sort of the sports angle. The Washington Post put out an article that surveyed several hundred college males, more than half of whom admitted to coercing a female partner into sex. Which
wow.
I don't know what their parameters were for coercing.
Yeah,
but I mean that. Those are not athletes. Those are just
right.
those are just young
average
men.
Average run-of-the-mill college
and
kids.
And this is the payoff for the porn culture. This is the payoff for dads
right.
who are not raising boys to, as you said, Ronnie, to actually value women as fellow humans of equal stature in the eyes of God and the
Absolutely.
Law and society and any other measure. And it's like it is. It's so completely broken doesn't even begin to cover how upside down all this is.
So boys, as fathers of daughters, let me bring this a little bit closer to home, because, you know, in kind of some of the reform circles that I've run in, man, there seem to be some wildly kind of extreme responses to this, one of which is, you know, you basically do the equivalent of like throwing a burlap sack over your daughter and making her unattractive and saying, don't go to college because, you know, really what's the point? You know, you're just in training to be a wife. I mean, that seems extreme to me, but I don't have a daughter. You know what I mean? And if I did, that might be my impulse.
And if I can interject,
yeah,
there is a distinct overlap between treating a daughter like that
Mm-hmm.
and a college young man treating a woman like she is a piece of meat, because
mm-hmm.
you are treating your daughter as if she has no potential to be reached and is only to be handed off from you to the next guy who owns her.
Right.
That's
so that's I.
Yeah.
That's
it's well said.
There's
yeah,
my
well
there's
said.
My rebuttal to that view.
Big R, you got anything on this before we move on?
Yeah, I know, and I know this is I know this is heavy for the rant, so I appreciate our listeners kind of engaging with us in this for sure. But yeah, I think it was a necessary thing for us to engage in. You know, so as the father of a daughter, so yeah, for me, you know, I think of protection in terms of you know, not allowing yourself to be put into situations where you can be taken advantage of, where you can be victimized. And that you can also have a worldview that, why do we stand for a biblical worldview? Well, because that's the only worldview that you see any sense of true equality, that sees any sense of God saying, I value you as a man and a woman because you're both made in my image. And there's and that's where we derive our sense of respect and value from. And so I think, you know, man, it's up to us just to communicate that to our kids, whether we have sons or daughters. They each have roles and they each have a place, in a role to fulfill as men and women. I mean, what do we do as parents but to say, hey, this is the kind of value that that the Bible has informed your life with. And for anything that kind of like steers away from that or to the left or to the right of that, what we do is we descend into brokenness, and brokenness has no boundaries in our culture. So there's where it is for us. Well, I said. Think.
Well said, baby. Yeah. And let me just say too about our listeners. Thanks for hanging with that, but thanks for listening in general. And we haven't talked numbers in a while, Pipe, but I guess this thing is growing, right? People are joining up every week, and we're getting more and more listeners and more downloads. So we appreciate you doing that.
Yeah, we keep hearing from people on Twitter. Hey, just discovered this, just started listening. We've had multiple people who have said, you know, I'm on a cross country road trip and binge listening, which I don't know what effect that has on someone's psyche, but I hope it puts them in a delightfully snarky mood.
I hope so too. I'm sure it does. Well, boys, speaking of being delightfully snarky, we've got another topic here. And I think the rest of the way out, these are all listener-suggested topics. And
delightfully snarky topics.
So, yeah, somebody just wrote in with a stunner. This is a great one, and I can't believe we haven't talked about it. It's why aren't there daddy blogs? You know what I'm saying? There's mommy blogs. It seems like, you know, you can swing a cat in any direction and hit a mom who has a blog, and she's posting all the pictures of like the unique things that she's made and the kids looking amazing and delightful, right?
Well, there's that style of mommy blog, or there's the world is falling down around me, but we're all in this together. You know, every mom.
Dude, I'm not familiar with that. Talk about that kind of mommy blog.
I think this is, I don't know if it's younger moms or it's you know, the shift towards authenticity, but it's the, you know, I'm sitting here in a room full of unfolded laundry, and the dishes are dirty in the sink, and sort of painting the picture of a chaotic home. But there's the more faith angle where I'm finding my satisfaction in the Lord, or there's the more confession angle, like I just want to lock my kids in the closet. But then it's basically a community of support for like pressured moms who are coming together and saying, yeah, me too.
My life is a mess.
Yeah, my life is a mess, and we're all in this together.
Dude, this is fascinating. So the reader's question was, why aren't there daddy blogs? Now, I want to ask the question before we even get into that. Are we sure there aren't? Do you know of a daddy blog? Do you know anything of this nature that exists? Because I'm guessing, man, and this is just a guess. There's some like 30-something hipster dad out there who's doing a daddy blog.
Oh, and I mean, unarguably, yeah.
There has to be.
Yeah. I've not run across that at this point. I've probably run across some regular blogs by dudes that insert a lot of like daddy information, or you see a lot of like,
I know of this, man. I know of this. I know
kind of
this.
A little crossover. It would be a little crossover stuff going on with that,
I feel like the closest you get are the guys who constantly post like daddy daughter date photos to Facebook and Instagram and stuff like that, but there's not like
subtext, I'm a great father,
yeah,
look at what a great father I am,
yeah, and and you know, or those kinds of things, but there's not the sort of like community that surrounds them. Like mommy blogs are built on this community aspect or herd aspect of like a mom writes about how hard her day is and like 400 women come alongside and say, it's okay. You can make it, honey. And there, I have never seen a dad blog like that.
Dude, why aren't we doing this for each other, boys? That's my question. Why am I not writing a blog saying how hard my day was and I having 400 people
Big
go?
Key, just, you because, ask yourself that question and get going on that. Get moving on that.
The question,
dude, seriously.
Well, here's the answer. If a friend of yours wrote a blog like that, how would you respond to your friend?
I wouldn't read it, for one thing.
Okay, and if you did?
I'd be too busy dealing with my stuff.
I would probably tell my friend to shut up and stop whining.
Yeah.
Like, life is hard. Buck up.
Dude, right, and the whole life is hard thing, man. And Big R, you could speak to this theologically. You're a man of the cloth here on the program.
I love that phrase.
Isn't there a sense in which, you know, there's all this blogging and you know, my day and it's hard and like, dude, the Bible is not unclear about this. Like, it is going to be hard. Yet there's this air of like surprise or disillusionment on these blogs where it somehow comes as like a shock to people that, you know, that having kids is not all like ice cream and puppy dogs, you know?
Yeah, because absolutely. I mean, the Bible's pretty clear. I mean, all you got to do is read stories about how hard it was for all the characters we read about in the Bible. And then you get into the New Testament and you got a dude named Paul who just literally is telling you that it is hard. It's going to be hard. It was never not going to be hard. It's supposed to be hard. Let me chronicle all the hardness and the heaviness I'm going through. And then, we act shocked because life is carrying some level of challenges for us. But I think it's because we have the outlet now to actually talk about how hard everything is. So in other words, if we have the ability to complain about our lives and the level of challenges that we're faced with. I mean, because it's so easy now, because we sort of have the mechanism to do it, we're going to take advantage of that, right? So because I can get and just type out a blog and talk about how woe is me about everything is, I mean, we're going to take advantage of that. And that's always going to be easier than to talk about, you know, the blessings that we have in our lives.
So it seems like it goes, woe is me, or it goes, look how perfect everything is. This is just idyllic and it's wonderful.
But you know what, though? I would say that you don't – and again, Piper, you can speak to this. I don't see a lot of blogs that are idyllic. What I see is I feel like that's a little more saved for like our Instagrams and our Facebooks.
Yeah.
Just these little like one-shot, you know, sort of like idyllic, hey, this was the family today on vacation. This was the family enjoying our Saturday, which again, I don't even care about that and I'm okay with that. But I think the blog culture, it definitely leans towards just a little bit more of a woe is me.
Well, and I think it's, I feel like, and going back to the sort of the gender divide between these things, if I'm having a brutal time familially, whatever that means, like just my kids are rotten, and my kids are rotten a fair amount of the time because they're children, and that's what children do, contrary to, I don't know, the way that they generally get presented as idols. I either just recognize that that's normal and this is just something we go through, or I have like a friend or two who I'll just be like, hey, my kids are acting like this, and then they'll just kind of laugh and be like, yeah, mine too. And then there's my level. Oh, okay. I'm not the only one. Everybody has to deal with this stuff. And why do I need to publicize how hard it is to be the father of a 10-year-old who rolls her eyes at me constantly and talks back?
Well, and again, too, is like dudes are not typically the primary caregivers for their kids. So, I mean, at the end of the day, moms are spent typically – don't get angry – listeners, but really dudes are not spending the majority of the time with their kids that moms are. And so I don't think we've seen that type of culture with dads sort of rise up in terms of becoming a community, whereas moms are always going to be able to find a community of moms. What dads do is say, hey, let's go hang out in the park where our kids play on the playground and we'll talk about the game, you know? And so there's a little bit less in like minute to minute engagement with dads typically than there are with moms, you know?
I think that's true.
You know, so I mean, so we're not gathering around talking about like the challenges of like when the kid gets sick, when the kid's not eating, when the kid is having problems with this particular thing, when we can't put the kids down for a nap, they never go to sleep, then we have to take them to the doctor. Like most dads are not engaging in all the minutia of that, I think.
Thank God.
So, well, then you just answer.
Or if we are, it is just a part of life. Like there's,
yeah.
I do not. I don't feel a great sense of emotional investment in carpooling my kids around and how stressful that is. I don't get this great sense of my life is so difficult. I mean, yeah, there are some days that are just stressful because, you know, my wife is working and I'm taking the kids from soccer to dance to we got to go to the grocery store on the way home to get them dinner to do homework to whatever. But like we get to
that's called just being a person.
I know. I get to the end of the day and I'm like, you know what? If I wasn't doing this, I'd be working and then writing and then on a call with somebody. And that's also busy. And you know, I realize I sound soulless because it sounds like I don't have a relationship with my kids, but like they're just two different sets of responsibilities and the relationship fits in somewhere.
You're just describing the difference between men and women. I mean, that's really all you're you know, men are from Mars, women from Venusing this whole thing. So basically because men aren't not as emotionally driven, you know, we don't feel like – we feel like the way that we get through things is by accomplishing the tasks that it takes to get through the day with our kids. And that's sort of the catharsis for us. Well, the kid had an issue. I took care of it because men are typically fixers, whereas women fix things as well. But they also have the ability to emotionally vent about those things. And they typically like to do it in more communal settings with other women, whereas we're like there's a problem. I fixed it. And now I can move on to the next problem and fix that problem. And I don't really feel like I sort of have the need to emote about it. So it's men and women right there.
Now, Pipe, my whole thing from where I texted you and said that putting up the basketball hoop was the hardest thing I've ever done, including adopting international.
Big G, that was insanely funny, by the way.
I know.
That was like a dad blog thing, though. I was emoting about just what I was going through emotionally. You know?
Tell the listeners what that text was.
Baby, I was putting up an average run-of-the-mill like driveway basketball hoop, which you have to be like an engineer from MIT to be able to put one of these things up.
Is this one of the ones where like you have to put it in a concrete base, or is this like where you fill it up with sand or water?
It's a sand or water. Yeah.
So it's like the simplest of simple driveway basketball hoops on the
scale. You would think, Pipe, that it would be simple, but it's not because there's like 110 pieces and like a 68-page instruction manual that's really poorly written and unclear. And
you basically just gave up a weekend. You're never getting back. And I'm going to tell you something, Big T. I'm with you because I had the same one at my house years ago, and I'm still angry about that weekend I'm never going to get back from having.
And baby, listen, I'm a liberal arts major, man. I'm a writer. I know nothing of wrenches and you know, bolts and that sort of thing. So,
who are you talking to? Right. I mean, it's like, I don't, when you say bolt, like I'm thinking like, what are you getting out of here really quick? Like, I don't even know what we're talking about.
Maybe if you and I had to put some of these things words together, it would take 6 weeks. Thank God Tristan was involved. My son, he sort of saved the day on the whole thing, but
he's not artistically minded. So he actually knows how to do something that a man is supposed to know how to do.
Yeah. Thank God.
Is that what we're talking about.
He's raising me in a sense.
Thank God that you actually had a man.
Yeah, thank God I had a man in the house.
So I tweeted out that your text and had one guy respond and said he tried to do the same thing and had to take the half assembled basketball hoop to a muffler shop so they could disassemble it so that he could start over and get it right.
So
there is a community of like-minded males sharing their emotional burdens. Yeah.
Guys, absolutely. Look, we're doing it. I mean, don't blink, but we're doing it right now.
It's happening right now.
To be fair, we just changed the format of the show. To be fair, I'm laughing at you guys who can't assemble a basketball hoop.
Well, you know, I mean, I was going to say that. I mean, I appreciate – you're right. I appreciate that you have a couple of sons, Big T. But, like, what do you do if you're me and Piper and you're only able to produce women in the house? And, I mean, you literally are – like, for me, not being, like, mechanical guy, like, I'm completely out of options. Like,
You got to just hire that out, man.
And by hiring it out, I just have my wife do it because she's way more mechanically inclined than I am. And I get in the kitchen and I make us some toast and tea. And
baby,
you know,
so is Double K. Double K is way more mechanical than I am.
Absolutely.
Like she does that stuff and I entertain her. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, like, what can I do to help? Like, can I go do the dishes while you put together that basketball thing or whatever, that soccer basketball hoop thing that you're doing out there?
She's like, no, just sit there and tell me funny stories, you know?
But sit there and do the podcast while I take care of this. Like right now behind me, my wife's like just putting together something, you know.
She's changing the oil in your car and rotating the tires as we record.
Yeah, absolutely. Hold on, babe. No.
I can hear
back
the lug
tires
wrench.
To the front. Back tires.
Yeah,
to
yeah.
The
back front. Tires to the front. Exactly. Exactly.
I'm proud of you guys for knowing that.
I was actually guessing at that, so thanks for affirming the truth that I got that right.
We did get the basketball hoop up. It only took 4 hours, and the guys have been playing. And you know, this is the back end of this sort of thing. So you move heaven and earth to get something like that put together, and then you go, these freaking kids, they better play like for hours on that thing. You know what I mean?
And they did one hoop, and then they were like back like watching videos the rest of the day.
Nah, they've been playing for hours, man. It's been really good. It's been satisfying. Oh, man.
Yeah, but you're still angry about that 4 hours.
Angry about the 4 hours, but I'll be posting like, you know, 78 idyllic pictures of them playing basketball as the sun sets behind them. You know,
and then you can start blogging about it, and then we'll actually
That'll be
have
my
a
next
daddy
blog entry.
Well, when it comes full circle is when you can write the blog about how that 4 hours was totally worth it for your child's happiness.
Right, it was totally worth it. I'll weave in some like. Biblical teaching about perseverance and, you know, how we grew closer as a result, you know.
I guess the problem I have is I don't really believe that's true. I just want my 4 hours back.
Yeah, I just want my basketball hoop and my 4 hours. Is that too much to ask?
Apparently it is.
Yes. The answer is yes. Unless you would have just gotten somebody mechanically inclined to put it together, and then it would have been, you know, 1 hour of their time, you would have had your basketball hoop problem solved.
T, that's what you got to remember next time. You got to be like Big R here, where it's this, man. I hire everything. I mean, if I could get some guy to come in and brush my teeth in the morning, I'd do that. You know, just
open up the wallet, man. Get the cash flowing out there,
dude. And, you know what? But you know, I think we all believe that this thing called time is money, right? So to me, it's like I would rather spend that 4 hours doing something else. Just give a kid a couple of bucks to fill that. You know, put the sand in the base and get that thing up, and I come back.
Time is money. Presto. It's why we're all such rich guys. You know,
right? Absolutely.
Everyone, take your financial advice from us.
Well, I mean,
put down that Dave Ramsey book.
I mean, when you have a podcast that's actually, you know, become the successful, I think we're qualified
Although,
now to give that kind
to
of advice.
To be fair, Ronnie's a pastor, which means that all he has to do is suggest that he might need help with something, and
four
people from his church will say, oh, I can do that, or oh, my cousin does that, or like you have a web of free connections, because assuming your congregation doesn't hate you, they just come and do nice things for you.
Yeah, that's – Wow! Yeah, let me remind them of that. This,
you could pay me to come in and remind them.
Okay,
boys, we got a couple minutes left, man, and we got one more topic here to cover, and maybe we can just go around the studio, as it were, and each give one memory. But somebody wanted us to talk about Christian summer camps, like what we remember from our youth, like going to summer camp, and this is especially poignant for me this year because I'm speaking at one of these things. In July, I'm like going back up to the camp in Michigan, and I'm the speaker. So
you better bring your A game on that Thursday night. That's when everybody's supposed to get saved.
Baby, I know that's the thing, and I'm so worried about that. Like, because I'm not a contriver. I'm not like an emotional heartstring puller when I speak. And yeah, I just don't even know how I'm going
to
do this.
Big T, are they asking you to do like the altar call scenario? Are they going there with you?
They've kind of like
hinted
around
it
because. They hired me. They know what kind of guy I am. They know I'm not like a big pine cone on the fire, you know, heartstring pulling kind of guy. So I don't know what I'm going to do, man.
Oh, man, that's going to be interesting. We want to hear a full report about that.
Oh, absolutely. You'll get a report for sure. Let's get some memories from you guys, though. Maybe some of this will help me in my quest to contrive the perfect emotional setting for Thursday night.
Well, the speaker always has an advantage because he doesn't have to create the setting. Because there are usually 2 to 3 days of just sheer exhaustion built up by Thursday.
Nobody's sleeping.
Right. Nobody's sleeping. Yeah. There's usually just gallons of Mountain Dew being consumed. So there's like this exhausted, chemically induced stupor. Whoever is leading the music knows they usually have a sense of how to sort of build the emotional soundtrack of the evening to the altar call. So all the speaker has to do is just open the door.
Yeah.
If you want to, and then they just straight up front. Here comes kids. I had a friend who just posted on Facebook a couple days ago. He said, "Phew, I managed to be the first He said, I managed not to be the first summer camp speaker to not save any kids. He said, he's like two kids. I guess it counts.
Yeah. Big T, did you hear that, man? Just did you hear what Piper just said? Just open the door, dude.
Dude, that just actually, the two kids thing, it fills me with stress. Because, like, what if I get zero kids, you know? I feel like that could happen to me.
Well, no, then if you're afraid of that, then you have to bring in the superpower, which is large bonfire by a lake, usually if there's a ring of logs for them to sit on, or possibly a built-in amphitheater, depending on how nice the camp is. That usually takes care of it for you.
Yeah, put nature into the mix.
Dude, you can get like you can throw down a big Paul Washer thing and get real hard, you know, get real reformed. Tell them none of them are saved, and kind of you could do that really big like fire and brimstone kind of thing. I mean, I think that might be effective too because they're going to be at that place where they're vulnerable and they're ready to hear that. You know, just condemn.
Baby, when I was a kid, it was two memories I have of church camp. One was. This one summer, I don't even remember if there was a speaker, but I remember this speaker, quote unquote, would just show us. You remember this documentary, Hell's Bells?
Yes.
It was a super long thing about how rock music is evil and you shouldn't watch music videos, except
because,
that, like.
Because that was always kids' problems, was the music.
That was always kids' problems. And except that the movie of Hell's Bells was like more music videos combined than I'd ever watched in my life on my own. Right. You know what I mean?
It's like what turned you on to a bunch of bands you would have never known about otherwise.
Yeah,
you
know, I'm like
you
were sitting there
out buying all their records.
I'm like, oh, like Blue Oyster called. I had to get one of the records. You know,
it's like, man, I just got home and bought that Led Zeppelin box set after seeing Hell's Bells.
Exactly, like Stairway to Heaven. That's a great song. I can see why people like it.
It sounds Christian too.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
You can fool
so
your
there,
parents
there was
with
the Hell's Bells summer, and then there was the summer of like Rapture videos. Like these things, these poorly made like C-grade movies with like a little narrative where somebody
Thief in the Night and all those.
Yeah. C-grade is being super generous, but
C-grade is being Thief in the Night, like the plane's leaving and you're not on it. You know,
For listeners, go look up Thief in the Night, The Death of Patty on YouTube. It will leave you both laughing and scarred forever. That wasn't a summer camp thing for me, but it was a sixth grade Bible class.
Yeah,
one of those videos, and it involves a guillotine and a woman.
Trying
to get saved, but it was too late.
Dude, I remember the guillotine scene like it was yesterday.
Oh, like, everybody's seen the guillotine scene. Yes,
I forgot their name was Patty, which is like the greatest '80s name ever. It's outstanding.
Oh, dude.
You know what's funny? I don't remember anything about summer camps involving speakers. I don't know who spoke at any of our summer camps. I don't.
That actually makes me feel really good. Like, yeah, continuing along those lines.
But I had a blast at camp. Like, I went to camp, I think, three times between the ages of like 10 and then through junior high. And 1 year was pretty crappy, but then 2 years, like, it was just fun. Like, I remember the games and the competitions and, and you know. You make these friends who you're certain are going to be friends for life, and then you never talk to them again. Because it was pre-Facebook, so you couldn't easily keep up with anybody. And none of the guys shower for a week, because there's just this odor in all of the cabins must just smell like outhouses.
Oh.
But it was amazing. I loved it for the most part. But yeah, no spiritual influence on my life whatsoever from camp. Church retreats were a different matter. I think I got saved at every single one of those. But but summer camps, just a ton of fun.
Big
dude,
T,
now,
I think
you get saved
at
all of them. Were you just
probably
were you afraid to like offend the speaker? Like somebody's got to go down there, kind of thing.
the way that our church did it, it was less about an altar call and more about like a, hey, here's a chance to confess, to kind of sort of more like a rededication. So it wasn't come down and because I
go pray with one of the counselors.
Yeah. Or like, in so, you know, if it was a smaller context, you like stand up and say, hey, I've really been struggling with this. And then there's like people come around and pray for you. And then somebody else does and it can last all night long. And you never quite know if it's the Holy Spirit or if it's, the caffeine fatigue thing. But that was church retreat. Camp, I don't remember a single spiritual experience from camp.
Yeah.
None.
Yeah.
But I remember winning Capture the Flag and various other games and our cabin taking home the points title for the week. So that was cool.
Well, that's funny, boys?
Yeah.
In light of what we're doing now, I actually had I had a radio show at camp. And by radio show, I mean like there was this like crude intercom system that would go into like all the cabins, all the little like dormitories. And me and my friend Russell would go up there every morning, and like we had a little like morning radio riff that we would do. And you know, I really think it was just God preparing my heart for this.
Absolutely. I mean, this has to go into the bio when you write your bio. I mean, it was
it really
always
does.
When always I write my, your future was this was always your future.
It was always my future.
Ted and Russ's hour of power.
That's it, man. When there's the huge like Steve Jobsian bio of me.
Oh, absolutely.
It'll be like 150 pages on that.
Yeah, all right. You get Moody on that real quick, man.
We'll get Moody on it. We'll talk to Moody. And boys, we should wrap because we've wandered to and fro. And we truly have on this program. So this has been great. It feels to me like there might not even be any time before we record the next ep. You know what I mean? It's just joyful.
Yeah,
it's such a joyful process for me. It's like we do these things back to back. So until next time, which for us will be in a couple minutes, which for the listeners will be in a week, Rachel the Held Evans.
This is my skyship, Dreamer. My cargo is stories, and our destination, dreams.
With Abide Sleep Stories for Kids, you can help your children fall asleep fast and learn about God. To find these kids' bedtime stories, go to lifeaudio.com or search your favorite podcast app for Abide Stories for Kids. You can also download the Abide app for more biblical meditations at abide.com.